Blog Talk Radio.
Africa, the center of the world. Latitude zero, longitude zero. Planned by the Creator. Sesanthropus was the first man found on the earth. That earth was the motherland, Africa. We know that without total understanding of what happened in the past, it would be difficult to relate to the future. We know that within the structure of the music, there should be a message, and the message should be truth. So now, we give you Africa, the center of the world. So vast, so great, the African embrace, the color of life, universal harmony. The earth supports our conscious effort for sustained humanity, human beings, human love on a spiritual tip. So vast, so great, the African embrace. Live beyond, love beyond your skin, to where you belong.
And hip hop that we don't stop. You see, it started a long time ago, and it wasn't a show. We gave birth to a style like a precocious child, feeling the passion for life, erasing away all the strife. Telling our tales with verbal mail, putting honey on the blade, creating language to persuade. Share who we've always been, always a blessing, never a sin. We are doo-wop and bebop and hip-hop and we don't stop. It's our mother gave birth to everyone on earth. So we echo her call. And always walk tall. Cause we're hip to the world, so we create black pearls. That everyone can wear, that everyone can share. We can't live in despair, so we shine everywhere. On and on. On and on. On and on.
That's right, we're going on and on, on and on. The beat doesn't stop to go on and on. Welcome back to Africa on the Move. On the 28th day of November 2021, we bring to you tonight's theme, which is a discussion with a revolutionary Pan-Africanist, Cuba, Venezuela, Ethiopia, Israel, and the Pan-African movement. That's our theme tonight, and our special guest will be no other than Abby Love brother, Baba Mukasa Ricks. He's a revolutionary Pan-Africanist. He's been struggling with our people for many, many, many years. And he's going to share some updated information on his recent trips to Cuba and Venezuela and other movements that are going on around the Pan-African world to tune into why we should understand these movements and how we can participate toward helping our people come closer to their final destination, which is the total liberation under scientific socialism, that's Pan-Africanism. So he's going to give us a dialogue from that perspective. And like always, you, the listening audience, we encourage you to call in at 323-679-0841 for any questions or comments that you would like to make as we go through this particular program. But like always, you know, this program is a voice for the voices. We speak truth to the powerless and the powerful. And the way we like to start our party is to quickly introduce our political panelists and analysts for today's program. Right now, we'll bring in Brother Haki, and we'd like to say welcome to Africa on the Move, Brother Haki.
Brother Africa, thanks for having me. My name is Haki Kamathi Mashoki, Colonel with African Awareness, and of course, you know, Brother Africa, my thing is all about institution building. But before we can have an adequate discussion around institution building, one of the things I think is important for people to digest is the destructive nature of capitalism. You know, often we talk about the decline of capitalism, and what we don't understand often is that behind the scenes of the states, which are so critical in terms of the entire union, states' fundings are systematically being reduced and to the point with having a devastating impact on the overall economy in terms of bankrupting the states of continuing. So it's a very, very interesting paradox. So I thought I'd write this a little bit in terms of, you know, some of the things behind the scenes that people have to be cognizant of when we talk about the decline of capitalism. I understand clearly why we talk about the decline of capitalism. For any event, Brother Africa, check this out. Now, the impact of the U.S. government closing factories and shipping jobs abroad has adversely affected the economy, economic climate, to the point of severe economic decline. Nowhere is this decline more evident than fiscal debt impacting states' economies. Historically, state economies were supported by government revenue sharing that saw the federal government sharing revenue with states to ensure states had the adequate resources they need to provide for their population. A policy that was once proclaimed state and federal revenues in conjunction should be used to utilize and enrich the entire nation was no longer relevant. Instead, a new economic philosophy would take precedent where the interest of capital would take priority and the states must fend for themselves. In 2001, revenue sharing was abolished and replaced with block grants, whereby funds dispersed by the federal government were insufficient to assist states and obtaining the resources they needed to provide for their population. These changes to state funding were deemed essential by Wall Street elites who reasoned providing states with revenue were akin to throwing good money after bad. The money that could be used for further investments were used instead on states who lacked maximized investment returns. Interestingly, Increasingly, this view gained legitimacy. With a recession at hand and unemployment at precedent levels, access to capital was at a premium. Augmented by global stock market collapse facilitated by 9/11 event, a dot-com bubble collapse resulting from overinvestment in internet companies, an unprecedented level of corporate financial corruption, i.e. Enron, Tyco, etc., these events underscored the reasoning behind ending government's generosity of sharing with states and implementing instead austerity for states, thus freeing up revenues for capitalists to increase investments for themselves. Now, part of the strategy to redirect funds from the states, by extension of people, to Wall Street was the Global War on Terror. Enacted by former President George W. Bush, the doctrine sought to proclaim the entire planet a war zone whereby U.S. military intervention is justified under the guise of fighting terrorism. This doctrine was extremely profitable, and the level of investments in military institutions increased vociferously. Pentagon investments increased from $331 billion at the start of the global war on terror in 2001 to $725 billion currently, not including overseas contingency operation expenditures. Despite these investments, according to the Office of Management and Budget, the U.S. budget deficit skyrocketed to over $128 billion, currently stands at $2.77 trillion. Ironically, the key to growing an economy is the flow of money through the system as a means of increasing the money supply. Investments in state make possible the multiplier effect, which not only does the money supply increases, but makes possible money velocity increases, which facilitate employment. Investments in military infrastructure does the exact opposite. Such investments increases budget deficits and contributes to wealth inequalities, negatively impacting the GDP of the nation. Now, consequently, unemployment only worsens because the capital needed to stimulate the economy does not exist. Instead, a small group of capitalists benefit from investments, but these funds are not distributed through the system. Offshore accounts, accounting schemes ensure monies needed to circulate through the economy is absent, ensuring high levels of unemployment in states and the inability of cash-strapped states to address unemployment and the social costs affiliated with lack of jobs. Now, the devastation of states in need of funding from the federal government is evident, particularly in lieu of COVID-19, declining consumer spending and corporate debt, evident of recession according to CNBC Economics, has undermined states' ability to fund needed programs, address public health crisis, or avoiding spending cuts resulting from crippling inflation, resulting from government's excessive money printing to benefit capital. Declining consumer spending directly impacts states' coffers. Absent financial support from the federal government, states depend on income taxes, sales taxes, and property taxes for revenue. Unfortunately, without employment or high levels of unemployment, if you will, the ability of states to create revenues is compromised. Funding deficits by states are further exacerbated by budget deficits estimated in a range of $360 to $500 billion per state. These state deficits likely will continue to increase, given the resources for state revenues are increasingly finding it difficult to navigate an economy that states itself must borrow to remain afloat. Income tax withholding by big businesses are declining, unemployment proliferating, elevating the very real possibility of going out of business. The stock market contribution and taxes, even under the best of economic conditions, is paltry, are now witnessing dividend payments too low to attract adequate investors on stocks, and now must depend on Wall Street to buy their debt. Obviously, as a source of revenue for states, banking on the stock market may not be a wise decision. If the state cannot depend on financial institutions for sufficient revenue, then perhaps the federal government. That would be wrong to conclude such a thing. As I alluded to before, political decisions were made earlier to divert funds from the public sector or the state to the private sector or Wall Street. During this process, it was agreed military investments would be a key component in enhancing capital's access to more wealth, utilizing war and plunder on a global scale to expropriate or steal wealth from other nations. In the process, the government was sidelined and the interests of the people were no longer a concern for the federal government. Now, in the process of consolidating inaction of the federal government, ensure legalized bribing was encoded in law, culminating in the best politicians money could buy. In the case of President Biden's Build Back Better Act, politicians on both sides of the political aisle opposed the needed program because of the cost. Originally, President Biden accepted the $6 trillion bill put forth by Senator Bernie Sanders. Attempting to appease Republicans and corporate Democrats, the bill's expenditures was reduced to $3.5 trillion and most recently down to $1.5 trillion over a 10-year period. The bill specifically provides financing for climate change infrastructure, child care, Medi-Cal expansion. Of course, with the Medi-Cal expansion, it does include dental or vision, affordable housing, and health care provision. Ironically, the final bill eliminated 2 free years of community college and reduced prescription drug prices and an extension of child care tax credits for the working poor. Now, given the need for the state's $1.5 trillion expenditure over 10 years pales in comparison to military expenditures, Congress is currently contemplating passing $778 trillion defense authorization bill, which is 4 times the expenditures for Build Back Better Act. If building the economy requires investment in people via the state, what message is being conveyed by Congress willing to pour money into military programs that will only expedite more suffering, more injustice, and more killing both locally and abroad? Clearly, this propensity for destruction is revealing itself daily. If violence is endemic to the tenets of capitalism, why would anyone perceive themselves secure when clearly poor people's lives, 90% of the U.S. population, do not have value? Build Back Better provision, which outlines endorsements for tax cuts for the wealthy, is a clear indication of what and who really matters in this economy, and we've got to be very, very clear on the implications as it concerns the human aspirations in American society. And I'll close with that, Brother Africa.
All right. Thank you, Brother Haki. Next, we'd like to introduce Brother Anthony. Welcome to Africa on the Move, Brother Anthony.
Hey, thanks for having me, Brother Africa. Revolutionary greetings to you, the fellow panelists, and the listening audience. My name is Anthony Williams. I'm an organizer for the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC. Our objective is Pan-Africanism, the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism.
And finally, Brother Anthony, we now will bring in our sister Eleanor. We'd like to welcome her to Africa on the Move. Welcome, Sister Eleanor.
Good evening to you, Brother Africa, all of the panelists, our guests, and our listening audience. Thank you so much for participating. I have to remind the world that I stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people living under Israeli apartheid, as well as the women and children of the earth and Mother Earth itself. Thank you so much for allowing me to participate in this evening's forum.
Thank you, Sister Eleanor, and we now will go to Brother Moses. Brother Moses, welcome to Africa on the Move.
Thank you, Brother Africa, and greetings to everyone within the sound of my voice, especially the illustrious panelists. My name is Robert Andrew Moses. I've been in the struggle for scientific socialism from the moment I was introduced to Marxism during a government class back in my high school years, 1968. I call Marxism the race to cure racism. I bear witness that there's one God, Jesus, who is the author and finisher of my faith, and that Mao Zedong is his messenger for government. Fathers, help your children. And we don't reverse correct verdicts. I'm pro-choice, and I vote. And I hope to say that women hold up half the sky. That's why I'm for the Equal Rights Amendment, ERA, yes. And we're in the struggle to convince people and competing for the hearts and minds of the people in all terms of scientific socialism and the need to organize the many to defeat the few. The objects and interests of the 1% is totally against the interests of the masses of the people, and we have to educate people to that effect. And I just leave it right there. Thank you, Brother Africa, for allowing me to be on the show.
We are always honored to have you, Brother Moses, and to our listening audience. This is Brother Africa. This is Africa on the Move. What we're going to do right now, we're going to take a revolutionary culture break, and when we come back, we're going to have a short segment on what's going on in your world and the community, followed by a statement from the Million Women March, and then we'll bring on our special guest tonight, Brother Willie Ricks, but we know him as Brother McCosta. He's a international revolutionary pan-Africanist, and he will come and share his experiences with us We'll be discussing various issues from Cuba to Venezuela to Ethiopia, Eritrea, just all about issues that are going on in the Pan-African world. We hope that you come and join us and have a dialogue with this dynamic revolutionary Pan-African brother. So let's pause for this call, and when we come back, we will continue the discussion. This is Africa on the Move.
Don't you where you come from? As long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind your nationality, you have got the identity of an African. 'Cause if you come from Clarendon, and if you come from Portland, and if you come from Westmoreland, you're an African. So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind your nationality, you have got the identity of an African. 'Cause if you come from Trinidad, and if you come from don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind your complexion, there is no rejection, you're an African. 'Cause if your flexion high, 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 if your flexion low, and if your flexion in between, so don't you where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind denomination, that is only segregation, you're an African. 'Cause if you go to the Catholic, and if you go to the Methodist, and if you go to the Church of God, you're an African. So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind your nationality, I've got the identity of an African. You come from me, you are an African.
We welcome you back to Africa on the Move. We don't know who set the world on fire, but we know who will continue to keep it on fire as we make our transition to what's going on in your world and the community. We are honored to have with us Sister Impachi, who is the convener and founder of the Million Woman Movement and Mark, and she will give us an update on that particular movement right now. So we'd like to welcome her back to Africa on the Move. Welcome, Sister Empress.
Hey, how are you this evening?
How are you doing, Sister? How are you doing?
Oh, just wonderful, wonderful, with all things considered. Well, you know, we just got back from the Midwest region. We were in Chicago and Detroit last week to really move forward with our boots on the ground campaign that is connected to the We Charge Genocide 21 project. So I thank you for inviting me to, you know, come on and provide an update. And also, of course, to encourage our people to really get involved now, because now is really the time. This is the 70th year commemoration of Paul Robeson and William Patterson taking the We Charge Genocide petition to the United Nations on December 17, 1951. And so we are looking at asking questions now in terms of, you know, what have we really accomplished in these 70 years, and particularly as it pertains to the issue of human rights. So what the Million Woman March and the Universal Movements have done, also as we get ready for our 25-year anniversary commemoration, which is next year, we've kind of combined some things because we realize that, you know, it's kind of an uphill battle when you just talk about women's issue and particularly Black women's, African women's issues. So what we realized is that it was in our best interest to kind of do something simultaneously. And so the We Charge Genocide 21 enables us to do that, along with continuing the almost 25 years of straight commitment and work for uplifting our women and girls. And note, not just in the U.S., but throughout the African diaspora. That was always our mission. And we started in the U.S., but of course, it was always the projection to focus on developing the first global movement for women and girls of African descent worldwide. And now we've done that, and next year we will solidify that with a year-long kind of celebration and commemoration, celebrating the great achievements of African women, Black women worldwide for an entire year. But at any rate, the We Charge Genocide 21 is in effect now as we speak. Again, this is the 70th year commemoration of Paul Robeson and William Patterson. So on December the 10th, which is actually International Human Rights Day, we will have a Zoom forum and dealing with the issue or focusing on the issue of human rights. And with us, note, we are We Charge Genocide 21. That differentiates us from anything and anyone else because we're focusing on 21 points, 21 areas of crimes against humanity. So it's not just police and governmental terrorism, but also environmental racism, COINTELPRO, the crack cocaine epidemic or you know, the infusement of that in our communities, mass incarceration, needless to say, gentrification, and certainly our political prisoners. These are areas that we have cited as crimes against humanity and i.e. genocide. Today's 21st century type of genocide is different from 1948 and times thereafter. So where many consider or look at genocide with, you know, you're getting your hands chopped off, your head chopped off, or being put in the oven. Well, in the 21st century, genocide is a lot more sophisticated. Yet, the ethnic cleansing is still quite evident along with eugenics. And so ours is, again, We Charge Genocide 21. If you want more information, you can go to our website, which is wcg21.com. It's still under construction, but there's still good information there ready. We'll be finished by the end of next week. It'll be completed. And you will see, of course, some of the other projections, such as the first summit that'll take place Labor Day 2022, We Charge Genocide 21 will have a Reparatory Justice Summit in Washington, D.C., along with the first pre-plebiscite convention. If you want more information, you can, of course, contact us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com, or you can call or text us at area code 267-636-3802. Again, 267-636-3802. We're really asking for our brothers and sisters and organizations to support. Write an endorsement letter, send a donation, become a member of the Movement for Black Human Rights. And again, December 10th, we'll be talking about the work of the great Malcolm X, El-Haj Malik El-Shabazz, as it pertains to his work in focusing on human rights for our people.
Okay, my sister, we'd like to thank you for giving us an update on what's going on in the Million Women March movement, and please keep up informed. We thank you very much.
And thank you, Brother Africa.
All right, to our listening audience, this is Africa on the Move. We will continue the discussion on what's going on in your world and community by entertaining our theme tonight, which is a discussion with a revolutionary pan-Africanist from Cuba to Venezuela, the Ethiopia, Eritrean, and to the whole Pan-African movement. We're going to have this discussion with our beloved brother, Baba Mukasa Ricks, and we would like to share with you that you can join in with us by calling 323-679-0841. We will continue discussion after this quick revolutionary break. This is Africa on the Move. We'll be back with Baba Mukasa Ricks.
Water in chains, living in pain, today is the same, and nothing ever changes. Hung by a noose, can't tell the truth, filled with abuse, and everywhere there's danger. How long can this go on? When will the light I see? I know I must be strong to last through my journey. Yes, to last through my journey. Yes. Time will arrive when we must decide to get off the ride and stop going through these changes. We must prepare and learn how to care, for soon we'll be there where our lives won't be in danger. And when the light is clear, oh how beautiful I will be to know that I've been here and made it through my journey, yeah, and made it through my journey, yeah, 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 made it through my journey, made it through my journey.
Pellerino. A bloodline across the waters, from Benin to Salvador Bahia. A scar across the face of the earth. Pellerino, the place they brought the Africans, the place where they tried to make them slaves. Pellerino! You can feel the whip, hear the cries, and see the blood in the red clay. The clay that holds the stones together is African. And each stone is a bone from a people called slaves. Pellerino was the place where death came to dwell. His neighbors did not complain, for he was a way out. from the cold gray cobblestone streets to the lifeless cathedrals, tall walls of demons called angels, haunted visions of white faces crucifying Jesus again and again. But in the sacrifice of this blood, of this dance with death, comes life more rich, more pure, more alive, where death spent many lonely nights pacing the floors of his funeral parlor, waiting for someone to die. Pellerino, a French word called the place of torture, became a place of strength, a place where faces of white saints became faces of black gods, where haunted visions and demons became healing visionaries and orishas from the motherland. And Jesus rejoined his kinfolk and was reborn and baptized in the sound of sensual skin turned up to dance, to inspire a fire like the sun, pronouncing his presence. Pellerino was the tongue of the flame, licking the eyes of those who have tried to remain blind, shining a light on a spirit that would not be denied. No, the chains did not break the spirit, did not enslave the music of my soul, did not shackle the will of my freedom, did not tarnish the glow of my gold. And all the Pellerinos in Africa, in Europe, in North and South America cannot destroy the majesty of my people, the love of my people, shining like the sun everywhere we go. Everywhere we go. When the light is clear, oh, how beautiful I will be to know that I've been here and made it through my journey, yeah, and made it through my journey, yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Welcome back to Africa on the Move. As your host, Brother Africa, we're going to be in the seat tonight, and we're going to take the heat, because as we define it, we're going to stand behind it. And we have this revolutionary brother, a civil rights icon. He's a freedom fighter. He's a brother who don't take no mess. And Mama and Papa know the best, according to Jane Brown. We'd like to introduce to you our beloved brother, Mikasa Ricks. This brother has been working for our people ever since, or as far back as the early and late 60s. He wanted to see our people free, and he wanted to see Mother Africa free. So we're going to indulge him today on picking his brains a little bit. We want to know what's going on in these countries such as Cuba, Venezuela, Ethiopia, Eritrean, and the whole Pan-African movement, and how we can participate. We would like to hear some of his analysis. Well, how do we move African people forward? But like we said, this is an iconic brother, and we are honored to have him. And right now, we're not going to hold you no longer. We'd like to bring in Brother Mikasa, and we'd like to welcome him to Africa on the Move. Welcome, Brother Mikasa.
Well, thank you, and Africa's on the move. Thank you, African.
All right. Brother Mikasa, from your own perspective, if one were asked someone who is Brother Mikasa, what would you tell them?
Who is Brother Mikasa?
Yes.
Freedom fighter, soldier, who worked in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, come through this sit-in movement, fighting for voters' rights and human rights, and working for the liberation of Africa, and trying to unite Africans in every city, all the gangs together, trying to unite all of Africa, all the countries, all the political forces together, and trying to unite with all the liberation movements throughout the world for Pan-Africanism and for the liberation of Africa.
Okay, you know, Brother McCarthy, someone go back there, memory lane, and they look back at the civil rights movement. They know that you were very instrumental in being one of those who helped popularize the concept of Black Power. Can you tell us what that mean then and what it means today from your perspective?
Well, we just, Black Power to us then, me and Kwame and SNCC people, it just meant that we wanted to stop the murdering, the killing, the slave men, the apartheid, different forms of colonialism that we were facing. And we needed Black Power, and that otherwise we need to go on the offensive and fight for our liberation. So Black Power was a call for to be on the offensive for the liberation of our people, to start fighting back and fighting against the forces of evil. And Black Power pushed us to talk about our hair, good hair, beautiful nose, our lips, our skin, our history. And when it pushed us toward Paul Robeson and Marcus Garvey and Kwame Nkrumah over there in Africa, and then it pushed us toward seeing Africa and learn our history, and that history included learning about all the great kingdoms and empires and universities and all the things that we had did going back millions of years. And when we added all that into it, we began to proudly say we were African people.
Okay, Brother McCarthy, we know that recently you had the opportunity to travel to revolutionary Cuba and Venezuela. We'll start with the Cuba aspect first. Can you tell us what were some of the things you can share with us of what's happening in Cuba, and how does Cuba relate to the struggle and liberation of Africa and African people today, from your perspective?
Well, Cuba is a country that took back its land, stopped the United States from exploiting the United States, forcing women to be prostitutes, to eat, hungry, and whatever. Stopped the United States from making people live like dogs down there, where the United States go down there and live like kings on somebody else's land, and create a petty bourgeoisie and have a have and a have not. Cuba eliminated that when they had their revolution. They took over everything and ran the United States out, and then took everything from the rich people and shared it with all the poor people, guaranteed everybody some food, some medicine, the best education, and let people know that everything in Cuba belonged to all the people, and it wouldn't be in the hands of just a few people. And so Cuba is a revolutionary country, and they live by example. And everybody in the world who has looked at Cuba, all the conscious people want to be just like Cuba. And we all worldwide has chosen Fidel Castro as our leader. And Fidel Castro have helped influence and develop leaders throughout Africa, from going back to work with Kwame Nkrumah, Sekou Toure, Lumumba in the Congo, the little brother in Burkina Faso, Thomas Sankara, Maurice Bishop, and many, many other thousands of others, and everybody who he has been a friend to, or the Cuban Revolution have been a friend to, the United States government, Democrats and Republicans, have went out to all these different areas and killed the people, killed the leaders, killed thousands, killed their children, if millions of people like they've done in Iraq, Syria, Libya, and many other places, and they expose the fact that the United States is raping Africa, purely raping Africa, and that where they're killing, got thousands and millions of people dying. In the Congo, millions and millions are dying. And all over Africa, people are hungry, poor, never seen a clean glass of water, but yet Africa is the richest continent in the world. And so Fidel Castro introduced us to scientific socialism and said, if you have socialism, then socialism will meet all the needs of the people and stop these robbers, these imperialist colonial robbers, from coming to your land and taking it. As a matter of fact, it encouraged the people to fight and run these people off their land. And that's what people are doing all over the world, fighting back and trying to run the imperialists off their land. And the United States continue to put billions of guns and drugs and everything else all over the world to keep the world, keep Africa, keep South America, Central America destabilized. And anybody to speak out against them, the place where they ain't dropping bombs, they put use embargo like they've been trying to starve Cuba to death for the last 50, 60 years. And now they're trying to starve Venezuela to death, even though Venezuela is rich with oil and other natural resources that the United States and Europe have been stealing from Venezuela for the last, I don't know, 100 years or even longer, 200 years, 300 years, or even longer, and taking all the resources out. And you see all these big banks and industrial growing and growing where the people that the resources come from are hungry and starving. So the Venezuelan people had a revolution just like Cuba, and they took over their country. And when they took over their country, they told the people that all the oil in this country belonged to everybody. And we're going to share it with everybody. You're going to get free gas, 6 cents a gallon. You're going to get the best transportation system at very, very cheap. You're going to get medicine, and you won't pay for it. You're going to get the best hospital care. And that one, they got housing problem, people living out there in shacks, in the woods, in the jungle. The government of Venezuela, under Hugo Chavez, called people together and say, we're going to build houses for everybody. And they met with the Chinese Revolution, Mao Zedong folks. The Chinese Revolution came to there, came to Venezuela, and built 10,000 apartment buildings. I mean, 20, 30, 40, 50 stories high with hundreds of apartments in each building. And they built it for all the people and gave the people. And then they have a ceremony and give each family the key and said, this is your house and your apartment for life. And they build 3 bedrooms for everybody, one for the boys, one for the girls, and one for the mom and daddy. And this is what Venezuela is trying to do. But the United States, and they own all this oil, Citgo, and whatever. The United States just froze, just took the Citgo from here in the United States and gave it to Standard Oil. And they got billions and billions of dollars in banks. The United States have got with these banks worldwide and froze Venezuela's billions of dollars and trying to take it and give it away and steal it. And Venezuela is struggling to have capital to meet and continue the work that they're doing. But the economy is doing much better because they united with China. They united with Russia. They united with the fine nation of Iran. They united with Palestinians. They united with Nicaragua, El Salvador, Nicaragua, and other nations, Zimbabwe, and other nations that's fighting for liberation. And the United States got an embargo probably on 50 different countries around the world. All of these countries support Venezuela, and they're trying to create a trade where they go direct with each other and cut the United States out and push the United States back. So this is socialism. Socialism is the economic system that we must be guided by. And socialism, every nation, every organization, every group, if you're going to be serious, you have to have and be a socialist organization and stop nonsense about no socialism or whatever. You can't be damn capitalist. Because capitalism don't let them exploit you, rob you, and destroy you, and destroy your nation, and destroy people. So we must be socialists, and Venezuela and Cuba are two of the leading socialist nations in the world, along with Russia, China, and North Korea, and Zimbabwe, and others. They're struggling, and Yemen, they're struggling, and Palestine, of course, they're struggling, but the United States is making war against them. And they're waging so much war around the world, and we must make up our mind. Also, I want to say that they are now invading and got armies and guns and bombs in Ethiopia, and they're fighting in Ethiopia and fighting Eritrea because these have been socialist nations of nations that's working for the liberation of their own people, and they refuse to go along with the United States. And the United States want to destabilize Ethiopia. They want to take the water out the Nile River and send it up to Israel and to those cooks in Egypt. So now they're waging war against Eritrea, Ethiopia, and Somalia. And we have to make up our mind, whose side are you on? Which side are you on, boy? Will you fight with Ethiopia? Eritrea, Somalia, Yemen, Palestine, or will you fight with the United States and Europe and the capitalist imperialists from around the world to rape, rob, and murder our land? Africa is now under attack, and we must speak out against that. We must act against it. I'm asking everybody that can hear our voice tomorrow as soon as possible, go out and start demonstrating at the different government buildings, television stations, in the communities, but expose people to what they're doing in Ethiopia. 1935, when the United States, Italians attacked Ethiopia, all the Africans, your mama, your grandmama, your great-great-grandmamas, and daddies, they stood in line all around the country begging for guns, where they could go, where they could go to Ethiopia and help fight to defend Ethiopia against the imperialism, against colonialism, and that today, that same situation here today. Are you ready to defend Africa? Are you ready to fight for Africa? And we must educate Africa. And that one thing that the Taliban did, not only did they fight with guns, but they ideologically fought, and they went and they educated the people. And when they educated the people, they gave them their ideology, they gave them their history, and told them that they should be faithful to their country and to their people and to their land and to their nation, and lay down your guns and use your guns against the enemy that's here, the United States and their armies. Use your army, use your guns, everything against these people and not against your people. Don't help nobody fight against your land and your people. And they did that when the Taliban united and came together. The United States knew that they was finished in Afghanistan because they ain't got somebody else to fight for them. They can't win. And that's why they create neocolonialism. And neocolonialism, Uncle Tom's, that they use to fight, kill, murder their own people and build armies and hold guns on their people, where the United States and all the European imperialist nations take out the diamonds, the gold, the oil, the silver, the copper, everything from your peanuts, everything, even the water out your country. They milk it down to nothing, and they get rich and richer, building cars and factories and industries around the world. But on the land where the resources come from, the people have absolutely nothing. And that's where we have to make up our mind, which side are you on, boy? And I agree with the young brother talked about socialist philosophies and those who write about it, from Marx and Nkrumah or whoever write about it. But socialism is the only way to go, and we must all be socialists. And I hope that every organization and every country and every group that can hear our voice today, I hope you clearly endorse socialism and start defining it and understanding what it is and how it works. That's what I wanted to say.
Okay, you know, Brother Mikasa, one of the things Brother Kwame Ture left on this transitional period was to inform African people worldwide that they should submit themselves with the Cuban Revolution and come to the Cuban aid and assistance. Now, when you go to Cuba, one of the things I'd like for you to articulate or explain is the social relationship of how the people interact with one another and interact with you as being a visitor, given the harsh economic blockade that Cuba has been dealing with ever since the early 60s. So when you talk about socialism, you talk about Cuba. More importantly, when you talk about the people, how is it that the people are able to withstand this this racist, unjust blockade, while at the same time playing a very positive role in terms of fighting the so-called virus and helping other nations around the world? What did you see and what did you detect in terms of the spirit of the Cuban people that allowed them to be so strong, so courageous, and so well organized?
Well, Cuba are the people. And socialism is a people's organization, is a people's movement. So they love people, they honor people, and that they honor any people, don't care who it is. And when they come to Cuba, they honor you, they put their best out for you. And you can see that they are on the move, they're educated people, and they're knowledgeable. They get worldwide information, and they know about what's going on in the world. and many of them gladly go around the world. They got doctors, 100,000 doctors or more that they rotate around the year waiting and serving people. They got armies that go to places like Angola and help fight to get South Africa, Mandela, all of them out of jail and free South Africa. They help fight for Angola, Mozambique, and all that. So what they do is continue to make contributions to different peoples in the world, and that they say when they were born, all the Cubans were born, they owed society a debt, and that is to make the world better for the people. So they use their people and their children to educate people. They sent my son and thousands of others there. They make doctors out of and send them back to their communities. They make engineers. They make all kind of people out of people. They send doctors to Africa, and they work on Ebola. They work on diseases. They work on farming, help fighting these diseases where the United States try to block needles and medicines from getting to people all over the world. They blocking it. And like they promoting the AIDS, they promoting death and destruction and hunger and sickness for the people, where people go and try to cure sickness and pain and suffering other people. And that they put everybody in a house. They don't, and like United States capitalism, imperialism, they charge you for everything you need to do. If you breathe air, they charge you to breathe. If you drink water, they charge you for the water. If you need medicine and all those kinds of hospitals and sickness, they charge you for the hospital. They charge you for being sick. If you need food to eat, they charge you a lot of money for food. If you need lights, gas, water, shelter, they charge you for that. Everything you need, they put a price on it. They even go cut down all the apple trees, take control of the apples and mangoes and fruit, and then grow it somewhere else. And then every time you get a mango, you got to give them $1, $2 and all that. Where under socialism, all the fruits are free, all that fall off the tree, they grow more trees where the people can get to it. They make sure everybody have light, gas, water, medicine without money, And you don't need it. Money is nothing. So our job and all the government's job is to serve the people and make the world better for the people. And if you got a government and they ain't what you're doing, then you ain't no government. You're a bunch of bums that need to be put in jail, need to be shot and put out of existence. So we need socialism, a nation that loves the people and want to solve every problem that the people have and use their economic everything to make the society better, where everybody can benefit and be happy. And wherever in the world there's a problem, be ready to send your doctors, your scientists, or your army to go and help solve that problem and help wipe out the problem. And this is what we have to do. We have to go now and join in with Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Somalia, Yemen, Palestine, and Zimbabwe, and the many, many other areas that we didn't name. We have to join in with them, join in with the Congo, because they're committing real genocide on the Congo right now as we talk. And they're getting all the minerals, everything out of the Congo. Got our women down there carrying thousands of pounds or hundreds of pounds up mountains on their head and make less than 15 cents or whatever, anything, nothing a day. And this is what they're doing. They're committing genocide on the greedy pigs. And the only way to stop them is revolution. And the only way anybody ever stopped them, they have to use revolution, beat them back, and do it. And we have to have that kind of ideology, that kind of history, that kind of philosophy, and that will guide us and direct us toward our reconstruction.
Yes, Brother Mikasa, you just recently came back from Venezuela, what I understood. As well as we know that Venezuela just recently had a successful election, national election. Could you just give our people a sense of what the scenery look like as we talk about this whole question of a people having a democracy? How democracy looked and felt when you was in Venezuela versus how a democracy, illusion of a democracy, is look at and felt when you live in the U.S.? Talk a little bit about this whole question of these practices that Venezuela has put in place to empower the people.
Well, Venezuela made it what? Excuse me. Everybody in Venezuela could vote. Everybody wanted to vote. They took them there and closed every school, made a holiday of it. And they did it on Sunday where everybody would be all work and whatever. And it just made it a beautiful, beautiful day. And I went to election schools and saw people voting and just saw everybody happy and voting and glad to vote. And that's what they did. And it was a beautiful experience seeing everybody out to vote. And remember, I come from a place where when we tried to register to vote, they took Cheney, Swann, and Goodbody and lynched them. They burned down over 70 churches in one summer in 1964. They assassinated our different friends from Mr. Damon to Mayor Evans, even to Dr. King. And they tried to register people to vote, but the Democrats and Republicans was assassinated us because we tried to do it. But in Venezuela, they want everybody to vote, to give everybody the right to vote and encourage people to vote. And whatever you vote, whichever way you vote, they respect it. And fortunately, when they voted there this time, out of 53 different governor positions, they won 51. The mass of the people love them because they are giving them houses and trying to solve every problem they got. So Venezuela is a wonderful country. And matter of fact, they took over, Bambosha was there with us, and Bambosha took me all over Venezuela. He did an excellent job. Bambosha is a warrior, and we really appreciate that African warrior. And he took us all over Venezuela, took us to factories like Calao Cornflakes, make all them cornflakes. They were down there trying to rip the people off, paying them nothing, a few pennies a day or a week to work. And the people took over the Calao Company and gave it to all the workers that was working in it. Now the workers, the common workers, own the company, and they produce the cornflakes and produce the boxes and the paper that it go in. They produce it themselves and got so many different brands of cornflakes. It is ran by a socialist group. It's called Calao Socialismo, Calao Socialism. And that and they got it. They took the way they make plastic cups and all that. They took over the whole company. They make all the cups and stuff that they have to eat and drink out of. And they took over the whole company. They even went to the poorest neighborhood where people need housing. Signs is out there with them. And so y'all need housing, and you got to build them. And they took the regular common people, taught them engineering and science and electronics and all that. And now the common people that want the house for themselves are now building a skyscraper apartment building. Got, I don't know how many apartments, 56 or 100 up, but it's tall. I mean, tall, luxury buildings. And they build it for the people in that neighborhood. And they will give the key to the people and say, this is yours, and you're yours for the rest of your life. And they would have light, gas, water, and everything it takes to live. And there would be a school right near you. There would be a doctor's office right near you. And that's what the Venezuelan government is trying to do. And that's why the United States government is trying to block them, trying to starve them, trying to make all the people go hungry. And they even prepare for war against them, just like they did Libya. Libya, one of the most developed countries in the world, giving everybody all the things that they need and solving the problem that people have people living decent. Probably some of the people live more decent than any other Africans anywhere in the world. United States used their neo-colonial puppet Obama and went there, bombed the country, and found some difficult opposition in the north of the country, went there, bombed the country, and gladly killed Gaddafi's family, sent bombs in his children's bedroom, blew up the children, blew the legs and heads all over the body, and then killed a million, 100,000, tens of thousands of people all over Libya, and bombed it and bombed it and bombed it to all many, many people in Libya running for their lives. So many American bombs falling that they're running for their lives, jumping into the ocean with their babies in their hand, holding on to a log, a stick, trying to get away from the American bombs. And they still bombing Libya as we talk today. They still bombing Yemen. They still, now they bombing Ethiopia. Now they're trying to bomb Eritrea, Somalia. And so this crime is continuous. It's not just in Nicaragua or Venezuela, but it's all over the world. Imperialism is a worldwide order that we have to organize against. If you got a worldwide order, a worldwide problem, it takes a worldwide solution, and that's why we talk about Pan-Africanism, all African people and all revolutionary people coming together and fighting this imperialism and fighting for socialism, all the socialists, all the nations that want liberation, all the people in these countries that want liberation. Move these neo-colonials out the way and take over those countries and let us consolidate and let Venezuela and Cuba and Fidel and Che and Kwame Nkrumah and Sekou Toure and Lumumba and Thomas Sankara and many, many others be our guide to liberation.
Okay. Brother Mikasa, we have our political panelists and analysts here today. And what we're going to do right now, we're going to open up the discussion to our panelists as well as to our listening audience. So if you have any comments or questions as relates to our theme tonight, we're talking with a revolutionary Pan-Africanist, Brother Mikasa. He just recently came back from Cuba and Venezuela. He has visited many countries. And like we said, his style back in the 60s has been a freedom fighter for our people. We welcome you to call in at 323-679-0841. So right now, we're going to go to one of our political panelists for today. We bring Brother Haki and allow him to entertain some of his ideas or questions that he may have for you. Brother Haki, the mic is yours.
Yeah, let me, first of all, let me just thank the brother for coming on. You know, it's always an honor to have this brother on the program. But certainly one of the things that I find very ironic is that when you look at in terms of the loyalty demonstrated by so many Africans in society, and despite the kind of oppression African people are subjected to on a daily basis, but perhaps more insidious, when you look at in terms of how capitalism actually works, it should give you pause for thought. It seems to me that when you think about situations like unemployment, homelessness, the lack of access to education given the COVID-19 so-called crisis, universities going broke, lack of access to health care, when you look at all those kind of things, those factors tend to adversely, disproportionately impact, negatively impact the African masses. And it seems to me, given that backdrop, it should be a no-brainer. It should be a situation where African people understand clearly that the situation as it exists in America is not good for us. But nonetheless, there are those who continue to advocate the case, you know, that the U.S. is the greatest place on the planet, the greatest nation on the planet. So my question to you, brother, is, you know, how do you combat, you know, unawareness among our people when they say those kind of things? What is your response to people who articulate that kind of misinformation in your daily struggles, you know, with the masses of folks?
Well, you just understand that your people are under colonialism, and part of colonialism is brainwashing and confusion, lies, trickery through religion, through news, through everything. And miseducation of the people, so the people just don't know, and they make slaves and oppressed people think they tell them you're doing good, even though you're hungry, starving, and whatever, and they tell them that. But our job is just go to the people, to them on a daily basis, in the streets, wherever you find them, in the pool halls, clubs, wherever you find them, go and have those kind of discussions with them, and point to them Africa and show them who they were before colonialism, showing what they did to the native people, and just point out the contradictions that these people and the people that control the riches and all this other stuff, they don't deserve none of that. They stole everything, and you're supposed to be rich, powerful, and strong, and highly educated, so you have to educate people, and you go to people, and you have a school with them wherever they are, and you discuss these things, and it gets very simple. It's not isms. It's food, clothes, shelter, lights, water, in the prison industrial complex, and destruction of your family, your daddy, where your mama, daddy, and you know, your wife struggling for food, for these kinds of things. And you just show them it's very simple. And people can understand it. As a matter of fact, people understand it very clearly. It's not far away. Truth and understand the truth is not far away from most people. Most people want it. Most people have understanding, but we have to have people that's ready and willing to go to the people and talk to them, knock on the doors, talk to them in the yard, talk to them in the streets, talk to them anywhere and everywhere and explain it, because they get one side. So you have to go and carry the revolutionary side. And so therefore, if you're going to carry that side, you have to become somebody that's in some kind of movement or organization and somebody with that kind of education to know the truth and that you could give the truth using different revolutionary forces and sources, because so many of our people just don't know how to look and how to find it or where it is. But our job is to show it to them and the best we can and show them how to connect to it and how to develop these ideals and, of liberation.
Okay, my second question.
So we need to organize. We need to go to the people.
Thanks. Oh, okay. My second question. You talk about the benefits of socialism, and clearly, you know, that is the case. But one of the things, when we talk about the benefits of socialism, often we talk about socialism to the extent that it'd be a great benefit to life. And, of course, that's a given. But equally as important is that we got to talk about the state of the planet. And one of the things that when we talk about, you know these wildfires, excessive flooding, and we talk about all these issues impacting the nation, it seems to me that this implicit threat in terms of, you know, global warming is something that people should take very, very seriously. One of the things that when we think about the constant disinformation that's been spewed by, you know, the media and with respect to global warming, it's certainly to do a very good job in terms of confusing folks. But my question to you, brother, is what can you say to the masses of people in terms of getting them to understand the urgency of dealing with this question in terms of global warming as it impacts life itself?
Well, everything is global warming. We just say that they not only messing you up as an individual, your family, your dad in jail, your children being drugged and killed, but they're messing up the trees, messing up the water. They're even messing up the ozone and causing all kinds of problems on Earth. So everything on Earth is responding to imperialism. All this is part of imperialism. And so you just have to tie all that into why we're flooding and what's making us flood. And we began to look at the chemicals and all the different things that these people are doing around the world, because they're destroying the earth. They're destroying the people on all kind of levels. So they're causing all kinds of problems. Droughts, causing the sun not to come in so much parts of the world, and doing so many things that imperialism that you just can't count it. But once you tie it all together, then people begin to see it. But our job is to educate the people, and we have to understand if you see it and I see it, then they can see it too. They probably got more sense than me and you both. They just need people that's willing to come and sit down and explain it. That's why we put together different kind of little education group, work study groups. One time we put together schools. We put together ideological discussions. But we have to carry this to our people and where they began to talk about it. Because now, today, they're being brainwashed and their attention are being taken away from it through the news media or whatever they have to propagandize us with. And we just have to take it to them and let them see that, yeah, all kind of problems, not just flooding and droughts and everything. Every problem we have come from imperialism. There's not one problem on this earth that we face today that don't come from capitalism and imperialism. Every problem. Every problem you have in your house with your family, every problem come from capitalism and imperialism, come from European colonial domination. Every problem, not one bad problem you have that don't come from them. Not even one. Matter of fact, if you stump your toe, you say that's goddamn imperialism.
Thank you,
Brother Hakeem. We next go to Brother Anthony. Brother Anthony, your question or comment, please. The mic is yours.
Certainly. Kwame Nkrumah warned us several decades ago at his speech before the first OAU conference in 1963. That Africa failure to unite will bring about the recolonization or of Africa, because we're dealing with a relentless enemy in imperialism and all of its manifestations. And how much of Africa's current problems are due to that, to the failure to unite as one, instead of 54 non-viable political states?
All of them. Every problem we got is because of Africa's not united. If we were united, the whole world would be talking about how and what a great pass we're making toward development, and like China. China making the greatest passes in the world toward development and strengthening and solving the problems of their people, making China and Asia stronger. And we could do it if we, as Africa, must unite. That's why we said we don't need no 54 nations. We need to make Africa one big nation with unite all our different armies, all our different economics, like Gaddafi was trying to create African banks, put all our natural resources together, and began to put them on the world market and develop Africa. And we put them on the world market, put them on there for a fair price, something that we all agree with, and use it to development and make Africa rich and solve all Africa's problems. So you're absolutely right. If Africa don't unite, they're recolonizing. Matter of fact, they're recolonizing right now. They're bringing in armies, troops. They got armies in every country, secret armies that even them armies don't know about in all those different countries. And they got sending American generals to work with African generals and to control the armies and the fight. So the next world war, big war coming up, will be over who's going to control the natural resources of Africa, because the whole world is on Africa's welfare. We feed and develop every company and every factory and industry in the world. They got to come to Africa to get the natural resources. So we take, and when we take control of that, then the whole world will have to bow to us and make deals with us in order for them to develop. But at this point, the whole world is on Africa's welfare. And the whole, and but by them being on Africa's welfare, instead of paying for what they get, they rape and rob and commit genocide to get what they get. So you're absolutely right, young man. Thank you.
Thank you. And I also wanted to add also that that what are there efforts underway on the continent to unify? I mean, there's a lot of information about the various coup d'etats that are taking place all over Africa, in the Sudan and in East Africa in particular. But in Africa in general, Sudan, and I mean the imperialist invasion of Libya, seemed to have destabilized all the countries in Western Africa. You know.
Yeah, you're right, in that the coup in the Sudan was created by Israel, and then the United States just reversed the coup in the Sudan, and then all these coups and wars are created by the United States and by the imperialists. And anytime we have strong revolutionary leaders or strong leaders that try to go independent or try to go toward African unity, they got the CIA, the same people killed Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, coup d'etat Kwame Nkrumah. They assassinate them and go and make wars against them and destabilize the nation. Yeah, so you're absolutely right. We need the United States of Africa.
Thank you.
Thank you,
right now, you're listening to Africa on the Move. We're going to take a rubber stamp break. When we come back, we will continue this discussion with Baba Mukasa. This is Africa on the Move.
It will be solved. There's a difference between revolution and reform. Big difference. In reform, a man observing a foundation, observing a system, sees many problems. But he assumes that there's nothing wrong with the system. The foundation of the system for him is a good system. Thus, what he seeks to do is to change the building as best he can, but he wants to leave the foundation intact. Example, if I came to this building, it's Ackerman Hall, is it not? If I came to Ackerman Hall and I looked at the foundation was falling. It was just falling, couldn't possibly stand. If I were a reformist, I'd say, okay, put a piece of board over that. So we cover the foundation. We haven't touched it. And then I'll come here and say, put a window there. Put a door here. Put a frame here. Put two rooms where there used to be one. What I'm doing is reforming the system. I am trying to make it look different, but I'm keeping the same rotten foundation. You must understand that, because this country is full of reformists, black people notwithstanding. And these reformists have a tendency to deceive you, to let you believe that things are really being changed, when in fact the foundation has not been touched, and the longer it stays, the more rotten it becomes. The more rotten it becomes. A revolutionary comes into the building, observes Ackerman Hall, and says, looks at the foundation and said, hey, this foundation is filthy, it's rotten, it's corrupt, it must be torn up. A new one must be put in its place. Once he makes that decision, and once that theoretical decision which he's made is demonstrated actively in his day-to-day life, you have a revolutionary. Thus, a revolutionary is not someone who seeks to reform a system. He's someone who seeks to replace it. I'm a revolutionary. I'm not a reformist. I want the American system destroyed. It must be destroyed and has to be replaced. It has to be replaced. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Again, I'm not calling for revolution. I see it coming, and I want to be part of the solution. I don't want to be part of the problem. I've been the victim too long, so I want to be part of the solution. I am saying that all of us must opt for revolution. All of us must opt for revolution. Now, revolution is very scientific. There's nothing emotional about it. There's nothing emotional about it. President Sekou Touré, a wise and courageous African revolutionary, says that in revolution there is no sentimentality. There is none. Whether I like something or do not like something, it is scientifically determined for me, thus I must do it. So I have no sentiments involved in my work. I just have to do what I have to do, and I will do it the best way I can. Best way I can. Now, revolution, we said, follows scientific laws. If you come and you look at the foundation and you see the foundation is rotten and you say that you want to replace this foundation, you want a new system, you're asking for revolution. Because what you're saying is that you want another system where there is a system. And we know scientifically that no two things can occupy the same place at the same time. I mean, that's logic. So if you say that you're against capitalism and you want another system put in the place of capitalism, then all you're saying is that you want revolution, because capitalism and this other thing cannot occupy America at the same time. Only one will occupy it. Only one will be dominant. Thus, if you say you want revolution, you understand you're talking about scientific principles. Two systems cannot occupy the same space at the same time. I'm opposed to capitalism. I seek an economic system which must follow the principles of scientific socialism. This system must come, will come, all over the world, America notwithstanding. It must come and will come.
En la cabeza, en intelecto y actitud, estamos sobrados, somos ricos y sigo respetando al rey de Puerto Rico, al cubano, al colombiano, mexicano y español, pero lo de nosotros sale del corazón, con sentimiento, con talento, violento, ojo, no con armas sino con conocimiento, el intelecto emana de los foros, te metes en internet y lo ves en los foros, es sabiduría, aunque muchos locos piensen que son habladurías, conozco primero a fondo la ciencia mía, para que después hablen como comadre chismosa. Yo te escribo en verso y en prosa. No soy Alice en el país de las maravillas. Estamos claros, te portas mal, te acribillas y te hacen papilla. Es que eso es obvio. O eres ángel o eres demonio, menino. O eres ángel o eres demonio. Quiero ver a toda la gente con las manos arriba. ¿Dónde están los latinos con las manos arriba? Que vive el hip hop con las manos arriba. ¿Qué? Con las manos arriba, que viva la cultura.
hablamos. Y lo que más me alegra, la gente latina siempre será gente negra. Comandante, te amo. Que Dios te bendiga.
¿Dónde está Amaranta? El Amaranta y el Pinky, ¿dónde están? ¿No? La cantera.
Métetelo en la cabeza, en mi intelecto y así.
We'd like to welcome back to Africa on the Move on the 28th day of November. We have a discussion with a revolutionary Pan-Africanist, Brother Mukasa Ricks. He gave his perspective and sharing his experiences with us going on in the Pan-African world and movement. Before we continue the discussion, we just would like to make a couple quick announcements just to share with our listening audience that we would like to send our support to Pan-African Roots as it published some of the most recent books released, Volume 1 and Volume 2, titled We Demand the Full Disclosure and the Digitization of All Slavery Era Records. There are two volumes, 1 and 2, that has recently been released by Pan-African Roots. We'd like to encourage all our listening audience, friends, and allies, take the opportunity to go to website www.a-aprp-gc.org and check this book out and make a contribution to our people liberation by supporting the author, Brother Bob Brown. It's a book that has a host of information that will help you get a better understanding of your past world so you can understand the present conditions of why the things are today, or who were some of the perpetrators. It's an excellent book on dealing with information, dealing with the institution of slavery. So please take a few minutes out, go to the website, and find out more about these particular two volumes, 1 and 2. We demand the full disclosure and the digitization of all slavery era records. Again, the website is www.a-aprp-gc.org. Also, we'd like to let everyone know, along with the station and working with the African World Association, we encourage you to come and join us this summer from July 23rd to 31st. That will be the African World's annual Black History Education and Culture Travel Challenge. We're going to Cuba. We're going to Cuba because we want to show our solidarity with Cuba and the Cuban Revolution. We'll be visiting two areas of Cuba while there, Santiago de Cuba and Havana. So if you're interested in joining us, showing your solidarity with your brothers and sisters in Cuba, hey, go to the website, www.aaa-cuba-tours.com, or email the African Awareness Association at African Awareness Association, all together, the number 2@gmail.com. So come and join us, and let's continue our revolutionary solidarity when it comes to our brothers and sisters. So at this point in time, we'll go back and continue discussion with Brother Mukasa, and we discuss this whole question of going on in the Pan-African movement. Right now, we'll bring in our next political panelist, analyst, and give them an opportunity to engage with Brother Mukasa, and that would be Brother Moses. We will now turn the mic over to you. Question or comments, Brother Moses?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Brother Africa. And greetings, Brother. I don't really have much to say. It seems that, you know, we've been here before in terms of the movement for a just equal rights and justice. Seems like I'm not sure where I want to go with this.
You, Brother Moses, we'll come back with you, and let's see if we can bring in Sister Eleanor. Sister Eleanor, the mic is yours. Sister Eleanor, question or comment? I think we have some technical problems with Sister Eleanor. Hopefully we can get that straightened out. Until then, Brother McCarthy, I'd like for you to make to issue of, you know, I think there's an issue of a concern when the people do not learn from their history. You know, we often say if those who fail to learn from their history are doomed to repeat the same mistake again and over and over and over. Now, as a member of SNCC, as a young political activist in the early 60s and 70s, SNCC was one of the first organizations, the youth were one of the first youth in the country to take a stand against the Vietnam War, and more particularly against the Democratic Party. Now, back then, you came to a understanding that the Democratic Party and the Republican Party were, in essence, the enemy to African people then. What is your position now when it comes to the question of the role that the Democratic Party played as it relates to our people oppression? Why there seem to be a disconnect between the interests of the Democratic Party and the interests of African people? The two doesn't jive. They seem to be in total opposition. But yet we continue to vote for these institutions, these two parties that have no interest for African people. Can you talk a little bit?
I'll try. Well, the Democratic Party is part of imperialism, part of colonialism, and they reap their strength and benefit and guidance and finance from the imperialists. And so their armies and their economics is all tied into imperialism. And our benefits and our guidance and our liberation is tied into socialism. And like Kwame Ture just said, two opposing forces cannot exist in the same place at the same time. So those neo-colonies or those Uncle Toms or those confused people, Africans, that try to guide us to the Democratic Party and try to make us think that we're getting benefits or will get benefits from the Democratic Party, we're making a terrible mistake and confusion. The Democratic Party worked for imperialism and the same worked for the Republicans, and so all of them have the same army, all of them have the same philosophy, and all of them will benefit from colonialism and from the rape of Africa and what have you, and either one can afford to stop the rape and the liberation of Africa. So we will get no benefits from these people, and we will not move forward from somebody else's party. We need an African party. We need socialist parties. We need socialist liberation movements, and not movements part of our oppression and part of our slave master. And I think Kwame Ture in his lecture a minute ago made all that very clear. So we need African liberation. That's why you have African liberation parties. You have APRPGC, AAPRP, you have PAIGC, you have different parties throughout Africa, even throughout socialist movements throughout the world. Our interest would be with Venezuela. Our interest would be with Cuba. Our interest would be with China. Our interest is with Iran. Our interest with the Palestinians. Those are the parties that we should be linked to and not to a party of the oppressor. Because all of them are Zionists. All of them work for the Zionist movement. And we should stop fooling ourselves and acting like we're part of such confusion. we get absolutely nothing from these people. These are slave masters that put blindfolds over our eyes and continue to oppress us. So we need a liberation party. We need to be guided by, again, Venezuela, Cuba, China, and other liberation movements. And we need our own parties. And that's why so many of us have worked and tried to build liberation parties or Pan-Africanist parties or Pan-Africanist movement or socialist movements. And that's what we continue to tell you, that the enemy is the enemy. And the Democratic Party is the enemy. Just it's part of imperialism.
So what would you say is... So what would you say is the issue or the importance of the so-called power of the vote today? How much importance do we put on that, and how do we use it, if at any, as a tool to move our people forward?
Well, I don't know about no voting and all that kind of stuff. I helped make it where we could vote and all that. But over all the years, I've seen the vote. I see us get more oppressed, more exploited. I see more colonialism and imperialism in Africa. I don't see anything changing. I see many people coming to our people lying, tricking them, and telling them things are right when we're actually suffering and dying. And that I don't believe in those tricks. I believe in the absolute truth. And the absolute truth is we have to liberate ourselves, not ask somebody else to liberate us. China didn't join the Democratic Party of the United States to get free. North Korea didn't build that nuclear weapon to defend themselves with the guidance of the Democratic Party. And no other liberated Venezuela didn't use the Democratic Party. Cuba didn't use the Democratic Party. And no other liberation movements or liberated countries use the enemy's party. We have to have our own liberation parties and creative, and our freedom has to be fought and won by us and nobody else. And nobody gonna do nothing for us. We have to do it for ourselves.
So what do we? So what do you say to today's African politicians who constantly come to our community to misinform us and misdirect our energies?
I just came from a meeting with them today. I had to rush home. I was at a rally where all of us spoke, and all of them, they're worthless. They have no power, no strength. They make false promises. They can solve no problems. When Venezuela had a problem of housing, there'd be 10,000 apartment buildings, 10,000, and gave them to the people. And these people here, they only make promises. We're going to pass a bill or whatever. And that's all they do is pass a bill, and they take your houses, take the land you live on, and continue to exploit you. So these people do no good. They're worthless. Lying politicians, and most of them don't have money. They, even though they run for office, they don't have the economics to solve no problem. Most of them are getting a little salary themselves, and many of them poor as hell like the rest of us. And so I think that we need a total liberation and unification of Africa to solve the problem. We have to go at the real cause of the problem. We need socialism. We need to get organized, and we need to put together all kind of little organizations and movements in our communities of all kinds. But they must be working for the liberation of Africa, coming together to try to solve different kinds of little problems that we have among ourselves. But I don't see the Democratic Party of America, the United States government, solving no problem. Our problems are getting worse in every city. They're building jails, prisons, and other things that to hold us down, but nobody's saying, let's solve the problem. If you got homeless people and you want to solve the problem of the homeless people, build apartment buildings for them and put them in those apartment buildings. If that's what you want to do, solve the problem. But if you want to just talk about the problem, you do that. And so all I hear is these folks talking about the problem. I don't see nobody solving the problem for African people. Nowhere. Period.
Okay, we had a caller that's been waiting real patiently on the line. We're going to take this caller and see what kind of comments or contribution he would like to make to today's program. We can call out caller 9435. Caller 9435. We welcome you to Africa on the Moon. Any comments or questions that you would like to share with our special guest today, Brother Makasa? Caller 9435. Welcome to Africa on the Moon.
Thank you, bro. I'm just listening into your interesting program and congratulate your panelists and your speaker and to your audience. And it's just so fascinated. I followed the elections in Venezuela. I know there were 24 areas in the country that were up for elections of regional and mayoralship. And that out of that, the party of Hugo Chavez, the Venezuelan Socialist Party, won 20 of the 24. So I am very happy with that. There's one area that's still contested, I think still being counted. But even if that goes to the opposition, it's minute. It means very little. So thank you for your guests. And thank you for your panelists.
All right, Carlos, thank you for your contribution to today's program. Thank you. Brother Makasa, also as a youth, as a member of SNCC, as those fighting for freedom and liberation, you understood the importance of networking and being in solidarity with other oppressed people and movements. Can you talk a little bit about your perspective of what's going on with the Palestinian today and why we should intensify our relationship and our very movements in terms of working more closely together? Talk a little bit more about the Palestinian question and its relationship to Africa and African people.
Well, I've often heard, as far as my knowledge, the three worst crimes that have been committed on this earth are what they did to the native people that was on this land north, central, so-called north, central, South America, Caribbeans, all these people that was living there. The genocide was committed on them. The rape of Africa and the slave trade and the committing genocide inside of Africa and the destruction of so many great kingdoms and empires and knowledge of people and genocide of whole people and the genocide of the Palestinian people right before our very eyes taking place today. We see that the United States and European nations and the Zionist movement which is related and connected to capitalist imperialist movement, have gone to a nation and committed genocide on the people and took their land, and not only took their land, but took parts of the land of other nations that surrounding them, and they used the United States to bomb the surrounding nations and destroy them where they can have strength to fight back. They have done been bombing Iraq for 20 years, look like. They have been bombing Libya, well, Libya's part too, and they're bombing Syria. They have destroyed and bringing destruction to Lebanon. And they have control ideologically and militarily and economically over other areas, countries in that area. And that so we see, and they got the Zionist propaganda machine going around the world that nobody in no area can say nothing about Zionism, expose what they're doing. If not, they come at you to punish you in different ways. So what's going on in Palestine is a threat to what they are doing and what they are planning to do to many other parts of the world. So you either speak up for Palestine now, or you will need somebody to speak up for you in Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, United States, somewhere in the Caribbean, South America, other nations, because this machine is running. It's running like a runaway train, and this machine that's in Palestine is also operating in Africa under AFRICOM. They're putting armies and deadly armies and ammunition and deadly weapons throughout Africa, preparing for major, major war, and we have to be ready for it. We have to be ready for it, and we know it's coming, and that there are some nations that's holding them off as best they can, like in Venezuela, like in Nicaragua, like in Zimbabwe, like in Cuba. Cuba's held them for over 60, 70 years. And we thank Cuba, but Cuba need all of us to support it, and we must all fight with Cuba, and we must all condemn every aspect of the government and every aspect of the system that exploit and oppress Cuba. And any news media or any other forces that speak and lie or support what the United States is doing in Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua, Zimbabwe, Palestine, we must speak out. But Palestine is facing genocide, and it's mass genocide, and it's disgraceful what they're doing. But if you see what they did to the native people, so-called Indians on this land, you'll see exactly what they're doing to Palestine. If you see what they did to us in Namibia, where the Germans committed genocide on the whole population, now the land is basically empty because there ain't no people there. The Germans killed most of them, and that's what they're doing in Africa and other parts of the world. So this machine, capitalist, imperialist, colonialists, or even neo-colonialists, it's just dangerous. And that you got people that look like us that would kill us and bomb us and drop bombs on us because the imperialists for the imperialists, and they gladly do it. Look at Obama. Obama dropped bombs all over Africa. He killed his own people. Look what he did to Libya. He killed them. And he could never stand before the people and answer questions. He had to just get on the mic, say something, and run off the mic or have a controlled discussion, but he could never face the people. And that, so we have these neo-colonists all over the world. They let them have a million, 2 million, 3 million, and they hold, you know, for them and their friends, just like politicians, but yet they continue to kill, murder, rob, hold guns on the people, and be very selfish. They are concerned about nothing but their selfishness. But Palestine is a worldwide movement, and the Zionists is a worldwide movement that's committing genocide on the people, and that they control the news media, they control all the information about Palestine, and they make sure don't nobody talk about it, or don't nobody tell what's going on. They hide it. Hide it behind these football games, hide it behind the news, hide it behind the school books in the schools. Nobody allowed to talk about it. Teachers not allowed to talk about it. Preachers not allowed to talk about what Israel, what Zionism is doing in Palestine. And that we are under 100% censorship. 100% censorship to keep the truth away from us. So Palestine is... Snick spoke out for Palestine and Egypt when the Zionists attacked Egypt and Palestine back in 67. Snick spoke out for it, and they destroyed our economics and did everything they could against us, told every lie they could on us and whatever, and made a lot of Africans afraid of us, run from us. A lot of politicians were afraid to associate with Snick because we spoke out and we stood on the truth. And when the truth arrived, we stood with it. When it came time to stand with Vietnam and said the Vietnamese war was an imperialist war. It was a wrong war. They had no right to kill the Vietnamese people, and we would not participate in it. Matter of fact, we would participate in fighting against the war and make the United States pull out and make the United States lose the war. And we participated 100%. And so that's the same for Palestine. We have to know what's going on in Palestine and be educated. So I guess I would think that if you listen close to Kwame Ture, or if you read Bob Brown's volumes of books he just wrote on history and what have you, I think you'll benefit from it, those of you on that level. But then those of you got to be able to read and then go and sit down and talk to many, many, many people and answer all the different questions that will come up. You have to answer the questions. You have to ask the questions and then answer the questions for the people and see what you people want to know. Go and be a part of every local organization if these kinds of things are on the agenda. We have to educate the masses of the people. We need people that will go to the masses of the people.
On that note, we're going to pause for the calls, and when we come back, we'll get our final thought with Brother Mikasa on the theme tonight, a discussion with a ruptured Pan-Africanist, Cuba, Venezuela, Ethiopian trend, and the Pan-African movement. This is Africa on the Move.
If you think of the Middle East in this modern time, you can't help but say the word Palestine. People there have lost their land. Some have lost their home. They live in other countries, their freedom almost gone. Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love, needs our love. Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love. There seems to be no answer to give us the reason why people cannot live, so no one has to die. We've got to take a stand for freedom, take a stand for truth, take a stand for justice. That's what we've got to do, 'cause Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love, needs our love. Palestine, Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love. People of all countries, of every race and creed, we need a new beginning. Let us plant the seed. Plant the seed of love and let that love seed grow. Plant the seed for everyone so all the world will know that Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love, needs our love. Palestine, Palestine needs her freedom, needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love.
Up. So That's his real name, Loki.
Loki is not his real name, surprisingly enough. It's an important line there. I'm all about peace and love.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're calling him a terrorist.
Calling him a terrorist. Okay, one nation in the world has over 1,000 military bases. Can you guess who? It's. Let me give you a hint.
Qatar?
It is not Luxembourg. It's not just Muslims that that oppose your imperialism. He's going to tell you who it is. Lumumba was democracy. Mossadegh. Allende. There you go. Okay, so this is the rapper. All right, that mm-hmm. is music.
Bust a beat for me, right?
All right, sure.
Glenn Beck is a racist. Gaza Strip was getting bombed, Obama didn't say shit. After you divorce yourself from the right-wing propaganda campaign, it's all simple and plain. America could stand the game. Your president got an African name. Now who you gon' blame? When they drop them bombs out of them planes, using depleted uranium, babies looking like two-headed aliens. Follow the money trail that leads to the criminal. Ain't nothing subliminal to it. That's how they do it. See the game they running. Give a fuck if he's cunning, articulate, and handsome. Afghanistan held for ransom by the hand of this black man. Neo-colonial puppet. White power with a black face. He said, fuck it, I'll do it. A master of disguise, expert at telling lies. Then they gave him a Nobel Peace Prize. Should've known he was trained in Chicago. Word to Chairman Fred and Mark Clark. What they do in the dark will come out in the light like a WikiLeaks site. So I guess Nkrumah was right. Who's ready to fight? Last stage of imperialism, I ain't kidding. In the immortal words of Marvin Gaye, this ain't living. Strip was getting bombed, Obama didn't say shit.
OBAMA, you ain't fooling everyone, I see the games you play. You VIP at the BIC, and we know that's the code name for CIA. Hey, the same way your cameras are watching us, we're watching you. Think we're easy to control, you ain't got a clue. Revolution's on the way, let's see what you're gonna do. You're gonna send the troops, you're gonna drop the news. See, it's not where you're from, it's where you're at. He's sitting in the White House, so who cares if he's black? And why is there soldiers still out there in the back? Natural resources ain't yours, it's theirs, give it back. You're just another puppet, but I'm not surprised. Look at Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice. They didn't change shit, house niggas fresh off the slave ship. You all burn in hell, even Michelle Obama nation.
What's the bigger threat from Osama or from Obama? Military bases from Chagos to Okinawa. I say things that other rappers won't say, cause my mind never closed like Guantanamo Bay. Hope you didn't feel the statue or tattoo your arm, cause the drones are still flying over Pashtunistan. Did he defend the war?
No.
He extended more, even had the time to attempt to coup in Ecuador. Morales and Chavez, the states are on the hunt for ya. Military now stationed on bases in Colombia. Take a trip to the past and tell them I was right. Ask Ali Abu Nima and Jeremiah Wright. Drones over Pakistan, Yemen and Libya. Is Obama the bomber getting ready for Syria? First black president, the masses were hungry, but the same president just bombed an African country like...
The Jonas Brothers are here. They're out there somewhere. Sasha and Malia are huge fans, but boys don't get any ideas. I have two words for you. Predator drones. You will never see it coming. You think I'm joking?
like to welcome you back to Africa on the Move. We may ask our special guest today, Brother Mukasa, to give us his final thought on the theme tonight. We have a discussion with a revolutionary Pan-Africanist from Cuba, Venezuela, Ethiopia, Eritrea, and the Pan-African movement. Brother Mukasa, give us your final take on this theme tonight, and also share with our listening audience, for those who may would like to invite you to their community, to their church, to the university, etc., how can they reach you? So the mic is now yours, Brother Mukasa.
No problem. My email is willyricks@comcast.net. Willyricks, W-I-L-L-I-E-R-I-C-K-S @comcast.net. My phone number is open, 678-777-4361. And I'm always ready. Secondly, I would like to say that Bambosi and I are investigating the Port of Sara, and the revolution is going on in that desert out there. And we want to take a trip out there and go check it out and see what's going on in that liberated struggle that's going on there. And we want to go and we want to support the Eritrea, Ethiopia, Somalia, and the East African Revolution, of course, Yemen, and the East African, and the revolution going on in East Africa, but it's part of the whole African revolution, and that we all must stand up and protest, speak out for Africa, and especially for Ethiopia and the war that's going on there now. The United States is putting all kind of weapons inside of Ethiopia. What they do is go and any opposition group that you have to the government in any form, they make it a hostile behavior, and they bring in bombs and guns and bag them by airplane strikes and whatever to fight against the government. So the United States is bringing armies into Ethiopia to fight Ethiopia and blow it up just like they have done Syria and Lebanon and Iraq. Libya, and many, many other countries around the world, and they want to destabilize Africa and continue to colonize it and to keep it enslaved and re-enslaved. And so we have to prepare to fight the United States government, whether it's Democrat or Republican. Democrats are killing us right now over in Africa under the leadership of the Democratic Party. And Biden is an international murderer, international colonialist, international imperialist, working for the same system. All of them work together. But we have to defend Africa and don't be fooled by the enemy. Fight for Africa, and Africa must unite, and we'll never be free until we have a united socialist Africa.
And again, Brother Mukasa, how can they reach out to you again?
Willyricks, W-I-L-L-I-E-R-I-C-K-S, @comcast.net. And my number is 678-777-4361. 678-777-4361. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you, African.
Okay, on that note, Brother Willyricks, we'd like to thank you for taking your time out to come and share this valuable information to our listening audience. And like always, we'd like to thank you for what you have done in the past for our people and what you will continue to do as it relates to the liberation of African people and moving humanity forward. We thank you for your presence, for being on this program tonight. We thank you.
Thank you. Me and Bambosha and the rest of us going to march forward.
All right, listen, audience, this is Africa on the Move. Like we said sometime, we may not give you what you want, but we definitely try to give you what you need. You have heard directly from Brother Mukasa speaking truth to the powerless and the powerful. We will continue this discussion, what's going on now in the community. By now, I'm bringing back our political panelists and analysts for the day, and we let them talk a little bit about their world and their community, what's going on now in their community. We start out with Brother Haki. Brother Haki, what's going on in your world and the community, Brother Haki?
Well, Brother Africa, I got to tell you, you know, when I think of this Build Back Better Act that they passed the Congress, it's very interesting because one of the things they did in terms of this particular act was they actually implemented a tax cut, for the very, very wealthy. The so-called SALT, or state and local taxes, they actually capped income earnings from $10,000 to $80,000. So in order to be taxed, taxes don't kick in until you're making $80,000. And so clearly for people who are wealthy, that constitutes a real tax cut. But, so it does have some benefit in terms of the poor. But the problem is that, this particular act, when you think about in terms of the kind of dollars that are lost, by providing tax breaks to the wealthy. Now, keep in mind, of course, when we talk about these tax cuts, keep in mind that Trump also implemented tax cuts for the very wealthy. You got to understand that it's going to result in a real dislocation of the economy. And so when we talk about the kind of economy, the only thing we got to be very, very clear on, when we talk about the need for money to circulate through the system, that is precisely what you have to have in terms of having a viable economy. As opposed to seeking a viable economy, they create these tax laws, which in fact not only shields the wealthy, but prevent the wealthy from actually paying their fair share of taxes, which means that the overall decline of the economy actually increases. Now, I'm thinking about the fact that, when you talk about the kind of schemes that they employed in terms of getting around paying taxes, some of the schemes they employed are things like the marginal tax rate. Of course, when you talk about the marginal tax rate, of course, you're talking about, those taxes minus itemized deductions. And so, therefore, given your income, you qualify for certain itemized deductions. Clearly, those individuals who are wealthy can itemize their wealth much more conveniently than those people who are poor who don't have anything to itemize. So clearly, that is a problem. Also, when we talk about in terms of this scheme in terms of tax avoidance, this question in terms of carried interest, and which is very ironic. So we talk about in this country how wealthy people get paid simply to be wealthy. One of the things that we talk about is carried interest. Now, interestingly, when we talk about carried interest, all you're saying that this is money paid to investors simply for investing. So if I invest $100 as an investor, I get back $10,000 in terms of tax refunds. So clearly, I'm being compensated simply because I'm wealthy, not because of anything I do in terms of contributing to the overall economy. So it's very, very ironic that this kind of thing exists. And also, when we talk about the kind of accounting schemes, particularly when we talk about inventories and depreciation, and we talk about these kind of things, which justify, putting more money into the pockets of the wealthy, it's come at a disadvantage, to the overall economy. And one thing people got to understand, that when you talk about this kind of giveaway to wealthy people, and it means succinctly that what you're saying is that not only are you starving the economy, but you ensure the economy is going, at some point, it's going to collapse. And the problem is that, of course, one of the things they have to do in terms of, understand this reality, one of the things they have to do is they have to have scapegoats in terms of blaming for the decline of the economy. One of the things that I'm very much concerned about, because people don't understand the nature of the economy, they don't understand how it works, they tend to believe that the working people are, in fact, the problem in terms of the decline of the economy, never understanding that the seeds of destruction are sold into the system or the capitalist system itself. And people often don't understand that. And one of the things, in terms of the whole question in terms of the marginal tax rate or current interest, one of the things when you talk about the qualitative easing, and you talk about this excessive money printing, and when you create the situation where you're constantly giving money to wealthy people, trillions of dollars, by giving trillions of dollars to wealthy people, that means there's less wealth for others. And the problem is that by creating less wealth for others, the question becomes, how are you going to reinvigorate the economy if you don't have any money going through the system? If all the money is tied up among the wealthy, who, of course, use that money for not only for investments, they also need to put that money off, offshore accounts. When they do that, it means that there is that money that is badly needed in terms of, expanding the system, particularly expanding the money supply, simply doesn't exist, which means that the economy suffers, which means the economy eventually collapses. And people don't understand the seriousness when we talk about the precariousness or the instability of capitalism when we say, please understand that, you know, what these people are doing is detrimental. It's very destructive to the economy. But what you have to understand is that someone must be blamed, you know, someone must be blamed, you know, for this decline. Now, when I talk about the stimulating the economy, the things that interest us about this Build Back Better, the so-called Build Back Better Act, you know, for, you know, things that will be a real benefit to the economy, like, you know, child tax credit for the working poor, will be a benefit to the economy by putting more money in state coffers, which means increasing their tax bases, make it possible in terms of the elevation of employment. Or when you talk about Medicare, which is a benefit to the state, which means that you increase money to the state coffers, which is desperately needed. Vision and dental care. Interestingly enough, when you talk about vision and dental care, one of the things is that, you know, by something as simplistic as dental care can contribute to less medical problems. Certainly, vision is also key in terms of eliminating mistakes, which leads to possible medical care. So it seems to me in the long run, when you talk about visual and dental care, it's in the government's long-term interest, from a monetary standpoint, to implement those kind of acts, because it's beneficial, you know, to the economy overall. And of course, when you talk about reduction of prescription drug prices, it's very, very good, because aside from having a more healthy economy, you actually create a situation to put more money in people's pockets. And by putting more money in people's pockets, you create more disposable income for people to invest in the economy, which is good for in terms of employment and services those the states need in terms of carrying on. So clearly, you know, there's when you talk about logic in terms of how capitalism works, logic is often stood on its head. And so therefore, what we think is logical is in fact illogical. And so this is the thing we have to understand. And we understand when we talk about the implicit threat in terms of capitalism, you know, as it unwinds, as it deconstructs, as it falls, we better damn well understand that someone must be held accountable. Someone must be scapegoated. It seems to me as an African person in this society, we should be damn clear that when it comes to being scapegoated, nobody fits that bill more perfectly than African people. So clearly, Brother Africa, people should be, particularly in the African community, working people, should be very, very concerned about the decline of this economy and the kind of self-inflicted destruction that's been imposed by the very, very wealthy. And I'll close with that.
I hear you, Brother Haki. You're telling the people they better heed the call. As some would say out on the streets, the white man hell is the what? The African man hell. Let's move on to Brother Anthony. Brother Anthony, what's going on in your world in the community, Brother Anthony?
Okay, let's see, a few things. One, at home first. It seems as if the scramble for control of Africa's resources and labor is intensifying. Judging by the number of coup d'etats that have taken place recently in various parts of Africa, in particular Sudan and Ethiopia, Eritrea, Somalia, and Mali. And I think Africans need to intensify their efforts to unify soon, or we could be subject to the recolonization of Africa that Nkrumah predicted years ago if we failed to unite. Also, let's see, in the U.S., to follow up on the point that that Mukasa made regarding the Democratic Party being a party of the slaveocracy, which a lot of us don't understand. Let's see, the Michael family, father and son, were convicted of the murder of Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia. Since our program last week, And I think, you know, and I think, you know, as a friend of mine pointed out, let's see, people would have been, you know, would have been fired up had that, had they not been convicted. And I bring this up in connection to our discussion with Mukasa earlier, in the fact that citizens arrest law argument that the McMichaels used for their defense was based on legislation that was passed in Georgia during the 19th century, during the days of chattel slavery. And they used that to justify, you know, the shooting of Armada Aubrey. And interesting enough, that law finally got repealed as a result of this case. But, you know, I find it, you know, that it took something like this to be public aired to get that law eliminated. But it seems like, Europeans are increasingly taking the law into their own hands to be judge, jury when it comes to killing Africans. So we have to be aware, and we have to intensify a level of political organization and the education of our people.
Thank you, Brother Anthony. Going from Brother Anthony, we bring in, let's see, we got Brother Moses. Brother Moses, what's going on in your world in the community? Brother Moses.
Yeah, I think Brother Anthony hit the nail on the head. These three white supremacists were convicted, and I think that was a good thing. This shows that the imperialist forces have not totally saturated the minds and hearts of everybody, and that, you know, there is still a glimmer of hope that meanwhile, I agree with everything the brother said tonight. Ideally, in a perfect world where there's the left and the right, but, you know, my problem is with fascism and the threat of fascism and what we need to do to counter that threat. And so that's where my problem lies. But we definitely need to unite in an independent party, independent of the Democrats and Republicans, in order to get rid of this oppressive system. There's no question about that. Whether we can do more than one thing at a given moment in time becomes the issue. In terms of uniting and organizing, and I'm really thinking heavily about what has been said tonight, and I want to assess the situation again and see if my position is holding water or not. But anyway, I appreciate having the brother on and his insights. It's definitely a revolutionary position. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses. Hopefully we can have resolved the issue with Sister Eleanor. We can come to Eleanor, see if her mic is working. Sister Eleanor, the mic is yours. What's going on in your world in the community?
Well, I'd like to thank our guest, first of all. It was it's good to hear a solid historical analysis on the situation. And I wish when the brother was talking about SNCC that he would have given the full name. Maybe I missed it, but it was a wonderful historic presentation. Right now, Brother Africa, what's happening is I follow with Brother Anthony. It took 121 years to repeal this old citizens' arrest law, where under Jim Crow and these old oppressive laws, where black people or people could be arrested by anyone for anything and alleged to have, or even to allege to have owed someone a debt, and their labor could be sold to another person to pay off that debt to the debtee. Now, that was backdoor slavery. And we've endured all of that in this country. And Georgia finally appealed one of those backwards laws. And congratulations on the state of Georgia, that not the state of Georgia, but one county in Georgia who stood up for what was right for human, the human rights and the life of a man shot while jogging, a black man shot while jogging. And we saw the week before where Kyle Rittenhouse, with his $2 million plus legal defense fund, used fear as a factor in why, and his defense of property, automobile dealership, was the reason for three people being shot, two of them dying. Brother Africa, we see so much going on in this world, and the reality is to be able to do more than one thing at a time. We're going to have to unite millions, tens of millions of people, hundreds of millions of people in this country for our revolution, because the rich are too heavy. They're not paying any taxes, and the economy, as Brother Hakeem said, is going to collapse because the working class can't afford it. They can tax us to the teeth, but we still can't afford to pay for everything. And people like Bill Gates and others simply establish a 501c3 in their name and disenfranchise the planet. Now, we saw where Israel had these cyber attacks of Israel, the impact it had in Mexico during the elections in September. We saw the impact it's having on Iran when they shut down 4,300 gas stations. We know that there is water shortages, and we understand that there are water shortages in Iran and Syria. We know that there's an incredible famine in Yemen. Children are dying every few seconds. And we understand there is strife in Ethiopia, that the Tigray are living in famine conditions and are leaving the country by the hundreds of thousands. So there is a crisis, but the U.S. can't solve it with bombs. Where people need food and water, you bring food and water. But there's a new crisis that's brewing domestically. Last week, Brother Africa, it was 65 degrees in Denver, Colorado. And the people in four states depend on the water from the snow in the Rockies, their water source. And if there's no winter, if it's 65 degrees, there's no snow. If it's 65 degrees on Thanksgiving week. So we see global warming about to affect 40 million people in the Southwest with the climatic conditions, these warm winter conditions. And this is crises in the making, Brother Africa. So we'll see further. We'll see farmers lose their land. We see indigenous people being threatened. And Brother Africa, this is the last week of Indigenous Peoples Month, of Native Americans Month. And I hope I stand in solidarity with all Native Americans. We haven't heard what's going on with that pipeline coming through South Dakota, but we do know this. We've seen the dogs attacking demonstrators. We've seen armed guards and people bulldozing right in front of the demonstrators, and now there's been a blackout. So what we need more than anything, Brother Africa, is get the super rich off of the neck of journalism so that people can begin to do and relearn the art of journalism, investigative journalism, and to back up off of the Reagan situation where he decided that there didn't have to be truth in journalism, that you could take an opinion. But after this is the 40th year of the Reagan Revolution, privatization, it's left us starving and suffering in every area of our economy. And we've seen the rich finding new ways, but now we have the government cutting taxes. Well, Elizabeth Biden, the woman that ran against Biden, she talks about a tax on the rich. Well, we better do something in this country, because the 27 countries in the EU are going to set a tax on the rich. Everybody's saying 25%. You can't put it in a 501c3. You can't do that. But keep in mind, this free economy here makes everybody who incorporates a person. And so the capitalists from abroad, from Europe, will be setting up shop here and have already begun to with these enterprise zones. The brother was talking about building housing. Well, right now, there are people in the nation's capital paying their rent to people abroad, and they don't even know it. So, Brother Africa, I just want to thank you for another wonderful show. I want to thank all of the analysts. I'm sorry that I was trying to respond to you, and I couldn't get through, but it was a wonderful walk through history, and the Palestinians have been so marginalized and polarized until we have to fight the social injustice and the misinformation to keep their struggle alive, to keep the struggle of Black Lives Matter. And Kwame and Ture would say that there was a step forward in 2020 when whites came out to support blacks, because the only way we're going to have revolution in this country and form coalitions, quote unquote, is that whites begin to educate the racist whites and the backwards people in their own communities. They're not going to hear it from me, Brother Africa, or from you. But I'm just an ordinary person. But they're not going to listen to a black scholar either, or like your analyst. However, we saw change, and we have to believe that we can step forward. And the vote may be a small thing, Brother Africa, but it's a mighty thing. Because as the brother said, if we fail to remember our history, we will repeat it. And black folks couldn't vote so long ago in this country. And for some reason, I understand the Voters' Rights Act had to have some kind of, it would come up every 25 years before Congress. Now, I need to do more investigation to find out how that works, but voting is an important thing. And more than half the states in this republic have passed laws to limit, restrict, and to make it impossible for millions of Americans to vote in the 2024 election. So we better stay woke, as someone might say. And thank you so much for this evening's show, and thank you for allowing my participation. And have a wonderful week. And let's stay in unity with our Native American brothers and sisters. Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Eleanor. This is Africa on the Move. What we're going to do is take a pause for the call. So when we come back, we're going to give everyone a chance to make their final comment. Before we go on station break, I would like to just remind everyone who would like to be a participant of what's going on in our world community, you can email us at AfricaOnTheMoon2@gmail.com. We welcome all comments, criticisms, even new ideas by communicating to us at AfricaOnTheMoon2@gmail.com. So we're going to a quick break, and then we'll be closing out the program with everyone else's final thoughts. This is Africa on the Move. And one reason why we have this particular program is because we are not yet free.
Oh, no.
That's right. That song is a reminder that we are not yet free. Welcome back to Africa on the Move. This is the 28th day of November 2021. Our theme tonight was a discussion with a revolutionary pan-Africanist, Cuba, Venezuela, Ethiopia, Eritrea, and the pan-African movement. We'd like to thank Brother McCarthy for his contribution to today's program, as well as an update for the Million Woman Movement March, our sister Ember Chi. And like always, we'd like to thank you, the listening audience, for allowing us to come in your home this evening where we can speak truth to the powerless and the powerful. What we're going to do right now in our final closing, we'll ask each one of our participants to say a few minutes with our final thoughts on today's program. But before we do this, let's just give you a quick reminder of some important events or announcements that you should put on your calendar. One of the announcements you should put on your calendar and try to do in terms of joining us, that's Africa on the Move in association with the African Awareness Association and other African organizations, you come and see for yourself Revolutionary Cuba. The African Awareness Association will take its annual Black History, Educational, and Cultural Travel Challenge. And this will be a travel challenge in solidarity with the people. We made a call out to all of the educators, artists, African women, activists to come and join us. There will be a visit to Santiago de Cuba and Havana. The date of this particular travel challenge is from July 23rd to July 31st. Leaving from Cancun, Mexico. It's a 7-night all-inclusive tour. So if you are interested, please contact the African Awareness Association either by going to their website at www.aaa-cuba.com or email them at africanawarenessassociation2@gmail. So come and join us. Come and show your solidarity with your brothers and sisters in Cuba. And come and learn something from that revolution. So on that note, put that down on your agenda. And the next announcement is we just would like to remind you to support Pan-African Roots and our brother, who's an author and writer, Bob Brown. They just released a 2-volume book titled We Demand the Full Disclosure and Digitization of All Slavery Era Records. You can find out more information on how you can get this book by going to the website www.aaprp.gc.org. That's the All African People Revolutionary Party GC website. Check out, purchase your book, and make sure you increase your knowledge on the history and struggle of the world and your people. So right now, we're going to go to the final thoughts for tonight. Those who are still with us, We'll give you a chance. We'll make some final comments. We're going to go to this caller 4298 to see if there are any final thoughts that he will make, he would like to make for today's program. Caller, your last four numbers is 4298. 428, 4298, Brother Moses.
Okay. I just want to make it clear that we definitely need an independent party, independent of the Republicans and Democrats, that's capable of carrying out revolution, which means it has to be guided by revolutionary theory. The correctness or incorrectness of the ideological political land will be decisive. And my problem is the United Front Against Fascism, and what that means in terms of Donald Trump and the fascist forces that are brewing within the U.S. of A. And so with that, I just say have a good night. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses, like always, for your contribution to today's program. We still have with us Brother MacArthur. Brother MacArthur, give us your final thoughts for tonight. Brother MacArthur.
Africa must unite, and we must fight for socialism. I want to hear y'all using that word and trying to define socialism more. Socialism means you take over all the economic resources and everything else, and you solve your own problem, build your own nation. And we need a worldwide party, a worldwide African party, worldwide socialist party, include our people all over the world, and include revolutionaries from all over the world, a socialist party. We're African. It'll be African-based, but a socialist party worldwide. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother MacArthur. Brother Eleanor, Sister Eleanor, your final thought. Sister Eleanor.
Well, Brother Africa, I want to share something that Harriet Tubman said. You know, she was told, oh, you freed 1,000 slaves. And she said, I could have freed more. But they didn't know. So the answer is, Brother Africa, education and information. She couldn't free more people because they didn't have the information to know that they were slaves and what slaves were. So again, Harriet Tubman said, someone told Harriet, you freed 1,000 slaves. She said, I could have freed more. They just didn't know. So information, education leads to liberation. But agreeing with Brother Moses, we have seen something that we haven't seen in this country in our lifetime, and that's a fascist movement. Donald Trump people out there going Donald Trump in 2024. It doesn't matter whether it's Trump, but he's tens of millions of people strong, these fascists. You know, we've gone through a series of things in this country. We went through Reagan. Then we went through the Bush years and these two failed, the erroneous attack on the Iraqi people. Then we've seen a leap in the number of billionaires and these super rich. And they're spending their time idly going out in space rather than paying their workers. And these conspiracy theories. And now we have something new that can affect human rights issues and human services. When somebody can use their computer in another country to shut down all your gas pumps. When someone can take over your utility plant and slow down the output of electricity or cut your phones off. So, Brother Africa, there are new factors that we face today that we did not face even a decade ago, let alone two decades ago. So we do need a separate party, but we also have to stand up against fascism. Capitalism is a beast, but fascism is a killer. Don't forget, we've seen it before. We saw it with Hitler. We saw it with Mussolini. We saw it with Franco. And we've seen it before our very eyes with Donald Trump in the United States, Bolsonaro in Brazil. We see, as the brother said, this neo-colonialist in Nigeria. We see what's happening in Yemen. We've seen what's happening to the Palestinian people every day for more than a half a century. So there's a new day, and that is a day that we must, all justice-loving people, all environmentalists, all human rights activists, all socialists, we need to find a common cause, and that common cause is one thing, fighting fascism. So with that, Brother Africa, I'd like to thank the sister and the brother, your guest, once again. It was wonderful. Just wonderful, their contributions to your show, and thank you so much. And remember what Harriet said, if they had only known, I could have done more. So with that in mind, education is liberation. Thank you, Brother Africa. Good night. And thank you, fellow panelists and guests and listeners.
Good night, Sister Eleanor, and thank you. Brother Haki, your final thoughts for tonight?
Well, Brother Africa, you know, one of the things when we talk about the destructive nature of capitalism, we can't exclude the fact that when we talk about destructiveness, we got to talk about how it affects the human being, how, the human psyche. One of the things, there's an article recently published, talked about drug overdoses in the U.S. Specifically, it talked about synthetic opiates in terms of the overdoses that are taking place in this country. It talked about, you know, fentanyl, methadone, and tramadol as being the leading causes of deaths in the United States. Now, the report going to say that over 100,000 people died from a year ago. And according to the CDC, 29% increase in terms of drug overdose from a year ago. Interestingly enough, it also talks about the fact, this report, it says that 64 deaths are attributed to synthetic opioids. Now, what is interesting about that, now, in the state that is most impacted by this opioid epidemic is Delaware, New Hampshire, New Jersey, and South Dakota. Now, this is important because when we talk about these synthetic opiate overdoses, we're talking about, when we talk about these four states in particular, we're talking about four states that are heavily populated by white individuals. In particular, we talk about a great number of poor white people. And so when we talk about this abundance, this exuberant amount of poor white people in these four particular states who consume with drug addiction, one thing is you got to understand that given the nature of capitalism, one of the things that the capitalists seek to do is to capitalize on any situation that they can use as benefits. Certainly, one of the things capitalism wants to do is they want to make damn sure they have some foot soldiers to defend the capitalist class. And so when we talk about militias and we talk about these Nazi groups and talk about people like these groups represent the front line in terms of protecting the capitalist class. Of course, you have the police who do a very good job in terms of protecting capitalist interests. But more importantly, because the police are outnumbered by the masses of people, you need a much larger group of foot soldiers to carry out the capitalist interests in terms of protecting the capitalists. And so when we talk about this drug addiction that are sweeping, you know, the nation, we talk about this over 100,000 people from last year. When we talk about this number of people, we got to understand that the psychological impacts are very, very clear. And one of the things that we got to understand is that when we talk about this addiction in terms of opiate addiction psychologically, one thing we got to understand that the need in terms of to enhance is one's self-image. And so when we talk about the kind of trials and tribulations in terms of growing up in society, which essentially says that you're nobody unless you got money, does adequately impact your self-esteem. And so this question in terms of how you elevate your self-esteem becomes a very important question. In that context, the question in terms of using propaganda in terms of enhancing one's self-esteem is something that the state could use in terms of motivating these people or conditioning these people to become foot soldiers for the capitalist class. Also, with respect to depression, one of the things that's also interesting is that, you know, when we talk about depression, you know, the desire for people to latch on to that which makes them feel better is very, very apparent. And so, therefore, if you can create a situation where you have groups and groups of people who are, say, advocating on behalf of the state, to be part of that group is to give you some type of dinner to make you feel better in terms of your condition. And so what it really does is mask the kind of depression that you feel, but nonetheless is effective in terms as a tool when you talk about the state's ability in terms of using propaganda to motivate people, to condition people to carry out his will. This would be a perfect opportunity to do such. You know, so this is one of the dangers when we talk about the kind of depression or the state of depression that it manifests itself in the society among the populace. And lastly, I would say that, Brother Africa, you know, when you talk about, you know, when you talk about new capitalism in terms of how it functions, and you talk about, you know, employing self, you employ defenses, that is key, because one of the things in terms of a society which says that, you know, that says that you're nobody, you know, that material things define who you are as a human being. In that kind of context, of course, one of the things you want to do is create some type of avenue in your mind in which you employ some self-deception in terms of being able to cope with the fact that society is saying you're nobody, but then internally you're saying that you are somebody. So employing self-deception and this notion that, you know, that exaggerating the sense of who you, sense of self becomes important in terms of, you know, who you are as a human being. And so one of the things, so when we talk about this employing self-deception, which is so important, one of the things, if the government or the state gives legitimacy to Nazi in racist movements in a society, certainly joining with these groups give you a sense of being somebody, a sense of accomplishment. It certainly exaggerates the sense of who you are. And so this is a concern we have to have in respect when we talk about the role of propaganda in society. And so when we talk about historically, there's this ability of the governments to manipulate people, to get them to carry out their agenda. Even though the agenda is not in the interest of the people, the ability of the government to get the people to carry out, carry out its agenda is in part and parcel of the mental condition of the people, of the mental state of the people in terms of as they navigate, you know, such a chaotic system like capitalism. And finally, I want to say, Brother Africa, you know, one of the things that, you know, one of the things they're advocating $11 billion for substance abuse treatment. But this treatment is to take place in 2022. It's very, very interesting, you know, given the fact that you have cocaine, heroin, these crack addictions, you know, in the urban cities. Nobody has mentioned anything about in terms of, allocating funds for the purpose of treating, you know, cocaine, crack, and cocaine addiction. But the moment that happens in terms of predominantly white communities, then it becomes an issue. So that in itself speaks volumes in terms of the kind of complicity, the kind of desire of the state in terms of liquidating or killing off African people in terms of, you know, a lot of the things that it does. So clearly, Brother Africa, this is very, very problematic, and of course it's problematic for African people as well, but in particular so it's very problematic in terms of the ability of the state to use its propaganda to motivate or to condition these people who are the most vulnerable. So clearly, Brother Africa, it is an issue, and as always, Brother Africa, you know, I always encourage people, you know, it's important, you know, to unravel the matrix, because without unraveling the matrix, there is no way conceivable to move forward in terms of, you know, just what we have to do in terms of moving forward. We talked tonight a lot about Pan-Africanism. Pan-Africanism is the key in terms of moving the world, not just African people, but moving the world forward to existence unless we have mass organization, as the brother alluded to, on a worldwide scale. So we need that kind of organization. We need that consciousness, but it's going to take work. It's not going to come to you. You have to actually do some reading in terms of appreciating the importance in terms of Pan-Africanism, the importance in terms of organization, institutions in the African community in terms of moving forward. And having said that, Brother Africa, you have a good night.
And do the same, Brother Hackey. We thank you as well for your contribution to today's program. And we will now move to Brother Anthony. Brother Anthony, your final thoughts for tonight.
My final thought for tonight is I agree with Mukasa. We need to build that mass Pan-African political party that he's calling for. And there are forces in the world that are working on that task as we speak. And one such organization is the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC. We are a very small, poor party at present. However, we are trying to build the this mass Pan-African political party for the achievement of Pan-Africanism. And to find out more about our efforts in this regard, you can visit our website, www.a-aprp-gc.org, where you can also find out more information about Bob's latest book. We demand the disclosure of all the slavery era and digitization of all slavery era records, volumes 1 and 2. In addition to that, you can learn more about the history of Pan-Africanism and the history of our party, the All African People's Revolutionary Party. And I would encourage people to check that website out. And above all else, join an organization that is working for our people's liberation. Thank you for having me, and have a good night.
Thank you, Brother Afton. To our listening audience, she has given me a challenge to check out the All African People's Revolutionary Party GC website by going to www.a-aprp-gc.org. To our listening audience and our supporters and friends and allies, let's do this thing together. Let's unite against the imperialist forces. And with that, we just like to say to our brothers and sisters that you may take the African out of Africa, but you can't take Africa out of the Africans. We are all Africans. We are one. And we'll see you next week. Same time, same station, and spread the word. Again, for any views or comments, program or others, please email us at AfricaOnTheMove2@gmail.com. So, from time to time, we must remind you, because sometimes we have slippage of who we are. So we leave you with music inspiration. This has been Africa on the Move.
Don't you where you come from? As long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind your nationality, you have got the identity of an African. 'Cause if you come from Clarendon, and if you come from Portland, and if you come from Westmoreland, you're an African. So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind your nationality, have got the identity of an African. 'Cause if you come from Trinidad, and if you come from So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're a
where you come from. As long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind denomination, that is only segregation. You're an African. Cause if you go to the Catholic, and if you go to the Methodist, and if you go to the Church of God, you're an African. So don't you where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind your nationality, I've got the identity of an African. Cause if you come from Britain, and if you come from Sweden, and if you come from we'll be right back.